Aftel.
Aftel.
Right, I think.
Aftel?
There's no Masora for it. But,
like the Yiddish word for apple.
Yeah. Right, exactly. So, Inyanei Refuah on Shabbos is a topic that has more to it than meets the eye. And the reason I say that is, as I was talking to Rabbi Schwartz, exactly what would be a perhaps unique angle of discussion for this topic, for people that are very, very qualified to be learning and knowing Hilchos Shabbos very well. So what could I offer that might be an additional aid to dealing with Inyanei Refuah on Shabbos? So it occurred to me that it's pretty obvious, actually. And that is that really in any field that a person goes into that requires a lot of textual background and then application to real life situations, one thing you learn very quickly is that no matter how well you think you know textually the information, when you're put into the position to deal with the halacha lamaisa in whatever field it is, things take on a whole new meaning, a whole new emphasis. I'll give an example in medicine. I remember that when I finished medical school, I was very excited and very confident, thinking that you know, I put a lot of hard work in. I knew I was going into a pediatric residency, and I spent my entire fourth year, which is a very open year in medical school, basically memorizing a pediatrics textbook. And I felt like I knew it cold, back and forth. And I started my internship, and in my first rotation, I was doing the emergency room. And I remember this experience, I'll never forget it. You'll see why in a moment. I was all set to go, armed with all my background and confidence. And among the first patients, it wasn't the very first patient, but among the first patients I had, was this little boy who had had a fever for about 4 or 5 days. And what brought him into the emergency room was parents were getting more concerned. Their pediatrician had told them that it was just some kind of viral illness. But the child started complaining of significant pains in his limbs and his back. So this already alarmed them, so they brought him in. Now, having been very well-read, I knew that for sure when somebody presents, and something that most people miss, but I wasn't going to, that a child who presents with a few days of fever and has pains in their limbs and their back, he must consider the possibility of Chayim Litzlan of leukemia.
Leukemia?
It's a cancer in the blood cells. It's a very serious illness, and it's one that actually does present that way. So immediately my mind, my textually based mind, began working along those lines, and I examined the child, and I did everything I was supposed to do. And being the rookie that I was, I must have been giving away on my face what was going through my mind. So already I could see the parents are getting nervous. Instead of me coming in and allaying their fears, which is ultimately what a pediatrician should really be doing most of the time, I was having the opposite of effect. It only got worse when, to explore my diagnosis, I said, we have to get a blood test. It's not that common that in a five-year-old with a fever, you need to jump in to get blood tests, but then again, you don't always get the luck of having a first-week intern to be the one evaluating your child either. And so I got the blood test, and I sent it off, waited for the results, they come back, and mistake number one was the way I was already handling the family situation. Mistake number two was I look at the lab results for the first time right in front of the parents, and my face must have dropped, because what do I see? I see that the platelet count is very low, the red blood cell count is off, that there's something really wrong with the CBC, and I said, oh my God, I can't believe it, I really got it. You know, like, first week on the job, and I made this amazing diagnosis. And then I said, oh my God, what am I going to tell these parents? And the whole time they're looking at me, and I know that they're growing increasingly anxious, and they start asking me, what do you see, what's going on? So already at this point, I had no experience with how to deal with the situation with them. I kept my mouth shut, and I said, Just give me 1 second. And I ran off to the attendant, right? And I, and like practically trembling, I went to the attendant and I said, look what I got. Five-year-old, 5 days of fever. He has bone pain. I already called it bone pain in my naivete. And look at his CBC. So the attendant takes one look at the CBC, where that was the blood count with all these parameters. And he says, very interesting. I see where you're headed and what you're thinking, but let me ask you one question. When you got the blood, did you put it in the purple top tube or the red top tube? So now this is something you learn very quickly on the job, but your first week you don't really know what you're doing to some degree. Although I should have from my fourth year, but what had happened was I made a mistake, a big one. And I, instead of putting it in the purple top tube, which has anticoagulant in it, which is very important in this type of test, I put it in the wrong tube, which resulted in clumping, and the details are not that important to you, but the whole CBC was totally erroneous. It was, I messed up, having not had the experience, and not really been involved in such cases on a common basis, and basically it was a lab error. The kid just had a little viral illness and nothing was wrong with him. In the meantime, it resulted in these very distraught parents, and thankfully the attending came back and saved the day. That was my first of many illustrations of where all the textual knowledge in the world is really lacking without shimush, without experience. And as true as that is in medicine, I would say it's equally true in Rabbanus to a large degree. You could know your Dei called. It's not the same as when you get your first Shaila. You could know Arachayim called, you can know Hilchos Shabbos called, right? As I remember, before, I was very fortunate. I did a Shomer Shabbos residency, which is a very good thing to do, to avoid Shabbos as much as you possibly can. But sooner or later, most doctors are going to confront issues of Shabbos. And I remember, having not really learned my lesson, I guess, I said, I'm going to be ready when I finally have to confront Shabbos and decisions. I'm going to learn the halachos and the Shulchan Aruch, Shin Chav Ches, Shin Chav Tes, Shin Lamed. I'm going to know it called. I'll know all the Nosa Kalim. Halacha Lamaisa, Shmir Shabbos, Lamed Beis, Talamed Hey, I'll know all this great, and figure I'm ready. And sure enough, I had the same type of experience. You can know all that really well, and then you find Lamaisa, you don't quite know the intricacies and the details that need application. So where all this is getting at is what's the advantage? What I hope to do now is go through what on the surface will seem to be a very basic overview of Hilchos Refuah on Shabbos. But the advantage that I want to offer is that as we go through it, I'm going to be giving and tailoring my remarks around actual cases where you could see the deficiencies in just looking at certain statements in halacha, and where, at the very least, what you should come out of this is with a sense of what you should make sure you really are if you're going to be involved in paskening these type of shilas. Areas and issues and details of real life situations that come up that will be very hopefully beneficial in terms of an emphasis of where you should ask your own shilas to poskim, because there's going to be certainly areas of ambiguity in terms of the psak, as we'll try to point out, and hopefully give you a little head start on that real life taste of the piskei halacha in these situations. So to begin with, in the handout, the first two pages really are that textual overview. I imagine that what appears on pages 1 and 2, many of you are very familiar with already. Just in case you're not, I'm going to quickly review it. But here, to a large degree, is what the handout could have been, at least the part on Pikuach Nefesh, on Sakanas Nefashos. These two pages. What does it say? The Aruch HaShulchan gives a very nice sort of overview of the different categories of Cholin. And the basic objective, the basic way a person handles shilas of Refuah on Shabbos, is step one is always to categorize the situation you're dealing with into one of these four categories. It's either Sakanas Nefashos, as in Sifim Aleph and Beis, Sakanas Eiver in Yud Ches, Cholish Eindel Sakana Yud Zayin, and then Yutes Michush Ba'alma or Mixas Choli. We'll see what the difference between those two is, hopefully. But those are the four basic categories. And challenge number one is, so where does my situation lie? Where does my patient lie? Now, to begin with, you get a feel already, even in this little superficial Aruch HaShulchan, at some of the complexity, because if you look at Pikuach Nefesh section in Sifim Aleph and Beis, the Aruch HaShulchan makes what I think is a very, very significant point right off the bat. And he tells you like this. Well, everybody knows when the Sekanas Nefesh is Dochuk, almost every mitzvah in the Torah, right? You could be Mechal Shabbos Daraisa without any suffer. Hazariz, Pikuach Nefesh, Hariz in Meshubach, Hashol, Hariz in Meguna, right? And Hanishol, Hariz in Shofech Damim, all these are very famous statements, all alluding to the very significant nature of Sekanas Nefashos that everyone in elementary school already knows about. And you could be Mechal Shabbos Daraisa. And you don't ask shaylas, you just do. And nobody's thinking about any halachas in such situations.
Could you, in the process of explaining, differentiate between treating Yisrael and treating
We could talk about that, for sure. It wasn't exactly the focus at the moment, but I'm happy to address that. We could talk the entire shir on that one issue. Don't let me get away with forgetting about it. I'll be happy to return to it in a moment, at the risk of a tangent that will eradicate this entire handout. But we'll try to control ourselves, or myself. That's one of my very, favorite is not the right word, but that's one of the most significant topics to me. And if it was a real halacha l'maisa issue, which it really isn't, in my view, I would have begged to have that be the topic. It's a hashkafic topic with significant overtones. I'm actually doing it in the high school over the last 2 weeks, but I'll respond to some degree just in a few moments. Getting back to the point of the Aruch HaShulchan, so the Aruch HaShulchan says in Sif Aleph all about that very absolute, easy type of Pikuach Nefesh. But then he mentions in the name of the Yozaruah ultimately, that the truth of the matter is, when it comes to Shilas, even of Sakanas Lefashas, Pikuach Nefesh, you should realize that there is room for Shilas. That there are situations where it's not Bahol, where it's not like an emergency, where the person has to jump in, do the whatever you need to do, and not have Shilas. In fact, I would say, and I think he's getting at this, the majority of issues that a person confronts, whether they're a Rav or a Frum doctor in their lifetime, are ones where there is time to ask Shilas. You know, the emergency situations, that's for Hatzalah people, that's for the poor house staff that confront the real emergencies. But once you're out there, and certainly in Rabbanus, the real challenge is in Halacha L'maisa Shilas of Pikuach Nefesh, that there's a little time to deal with and to discuss. So we're going to see how that comes to the fore in a few moments. But it was interesting to me that the Aruch HaShulchan was sensitive to that and emphasized that right off the bat. Then when it comes to the category of Sakanas Eiver, we have to see that also is not so simple, especially Bizmaneinu. What is Sakanas Eiver? So we know the din by Sakanas Eiver is? What's the din by Sakanas Eiver? Can I be Mechal Shabbos Daraisa? Yes? No.
Officially,
no, right? If you look in the Shulchan Aruch, Sakanas Eiver, right? There is a Shita, yes, actually. The Iri, I believe, says that actually. But the halacha psuka is that Sakanas Eiver, you cannot be Mechal Shabbos Daraisa. But it does have an edge up on Chol HaShem HaSakana, and that is you can be Mechal Shabbos Midarabanan, any Darabanan. Not just the Mirul Nachri, not just Tushinoi, but all the Darabanans are open for Sakanas Eiver. So that's the halacha. Where it gets complicated, especially in contemporary times, is what exactly is meant by Sakanas Eiver? What exactly does that mean? Does that mean loss of the Eiver? A little dysfunction? How far do you go with that? That's challenge number one. When do I say there is Sakanas Eiver? And a real contemporary issue is there are many poskim that will make the statement, the following statement. We have to get perspective on every case of Sakanas Eiver, really Bizmaneinu, is Sakanas Lefashos. And therefore, maybe that's what you were getting at. Therefore, you can be Mechal Shabbos Daraisa. So that's interesting. What exactly that means. And how thorough is the application of that concept? We're going to have to return to that as well. And why is that true in contemporary times and was not true in all times? How did that change? So we'll Mitzvah Hashem, get to that probably next week. Third category is Chol HaShem B'Sakana. That's another category that, on the face of it, seems very simple. What's the Chol HaShem B'Sakana? So it's a Chol HaShem B'Sakana, right? There's no Sakanas Nefashos to this person. Good. However, he is a Chol, whatever that means. So what makes him a Chol and not a Michush Ba'alma? What makes him a Chol and not a Mixas Chol? So that is one of the most tricky categorizations in my experience. Not on paper, but in my experience, people have big time trouble with this all the time. especially guys that know the halachos, they're always grappling with, well, what am I? Have I made it yet? To Chol Hashem Basakana. So what's a practical approach to that? Because Lamaisa, you're going to need it. Because there's big nafkaminas. So Chol Hashem Basakana, it's mutter amir anachri. It's mutter refua. It's mutter muksa. And then there's a whole debate. Ho machlokas rishonim, very famous. What about other derabanans? Are they mutter? So we pass them like the Ramban, basically, as the Aruch Shulchan over here even tells you, that, yeah, other derabanans b'shinoi. That's the Ramban shita. We seem to hold up like that. Okay, so we have to better understand all the application, what exactly is mutter, and more importantly, who really fits in the category. That's the biggest challenge. What about katan? A katan is automatically considered a kolchein b'sakana. So I remember the first time I had to confront that issue. So I knew, katan is automatically a kolchein b'sakana. So I was asked the question, right, about a 12-year-old. So al pidin, okay, he's not bar mitzvah. So is that the definition of a katan? So ultimately, we have to see how that plays out, lemaisa, because there's about four or five opinions as to exactly what a katan is in this halacha. So, but it's going to be a real shiloh, because you have to decide exactly how you're going to handle these questions when you're confronting different age children. Is it a blanket age? Is that the cutoff, or if there's some description of what a katan should be, as there is in other areas of halacha? You know, we'll have to discuss that. And then within here is a whole slew of other issues. Fever, status of fever. Some people will tell you, oh, fever, that's an automatic sakana. Sakana statashos, be over under rises. Others will say, no, there's a whole bunch of tshuvos we're going to hear from all the poskim, a different number, what the cutoff is, that sakana statashos. Some of them really get angry about it, right? Like Moshe Feinstein, for example, has a tshuva, we're going to see it. He starts defining numbers that get the Tzitz Eliezer very upset. He almost is sarcastic in his tshuva about his reaction to what Rav Moshe says. You have to understand what's the argument over there. Has to have some type of explanation. Finally, Michush Ba'alma and Mixas Choli, we have to get to that. That'll be at the end. And that's going to really be maybe the smallest topic, yet it could be the largest. The whole Gzeiros Refuah is a tremendously, to some, compelling topic, very interesting topic. To others, it's not so compelling and interesting, but just difficult to understand or comprehend. And Batal Atam, Batal Gzera gets in there. We have to talk a little about that. And hopefully we'll get to that by the end of next week. So let's begin with page 2. And another quick little overview. I hate to keep hitting you with overviews, but at least it gives you a feel for what's coming. And you can make intelligent decisions about coming back, how long you need to stay, things like that. I always felt it was a good thing to know as much ahead of time. So page 2 is the last bit of this overview. This is the overview of Sakanas Nefashos. Mahi Sakana. And I just wanted to show you, I purposely took this piece from Shmir Shabbos, right? This is right out of Shmir Shabbos Kilchusa. Gives you a list. I had this list at one point memorized, down solid, and figured it's going to be, you know, the exclusive, inclusive list. But we'll see, it doesn't really get you too far. That's what's going to be our objective. We're going to go through each of the categories here and go through cases that seem to fall into the categories, and we'll have to see how they work out. So, for example, in the beginning, Safik Sakana talks about yesh, any type of chash that is a Sakana. Safik Sakana, that's good enough to be Sakana Stafashos, right? So, what's the klal by Pikuach Nefesh when it comes to Safik? Anybody? What's the well-known klal? Huh? What is it? I can't hear you. What? Ain hochin achar rov, b'sakanas nefashos, right? There's no rov, meaning any suffix is good enough. That's the implication. Ain hochin, that's the famous part. Ain hochin achar rov, b'sakanas nefashos. So, how blanket a statement is that? Is that really true? To what degree? No limit at all? I could devise for you, you give me any complaint the person has, real or imagined, right? And I love the example of Shechter when he wants to emphasize the point I'm about to make. So he always gives the guy, I love this example, we're going to use it again, the guy with the ingrown toenail thinks it's going to kill him, right? So, seems ludicrous, right? Rosh Hashanah uses it to illustrate how sometimes we say, batul daito esel kol adam, that in the assessment of a sakana, if you're in this miut that makes no sense and that like 1,000 people would disagree with you, that an ingrown toenail is not going to kill you, so he says, batul daito esel kol adam, even if he thinks it's sakana, we don't give him any credence to that, it's not a sakana. However, if I wanted to, I could certainly come up with a scenario now where an ingrown toenail could lead to this person's demise. So does that mean in Halkin Acharov, this is some yitz, so that's really Sakhanas Nefashos? Obviously not. So fine, that's an extreme ludicrous case, but where do we draw the line? Where in practically speaking do we? I'll give you a real life example. The very first time I was asked by somebody, and they shouldn't have asked me, I was in no position, certainly, to answer this shaila, and I quickly sent them to the local rabbi, but they said to me, you know, they had an issue of a concern of their child with a sore throat. Can we be Mechal Shabbos Daraisa because of the kid is complaining about his throat? So I remember at the time what was going through my head. I said, oh my God, sore throat, strep, rheumatic fever, Sakhanas Nefashos. My God, Sakhanas Nefashos. If I had answered the child, I would say, any Daraisa you want, quick, let's take care of it. I'm not sure that's the correct way to assess it, right? And these are the kind of cases that really happen. Oh, his ear hurts. Otitis media. Oh, certainly, I know. I read once there's a complication of otitis media, bacteremia, there's a bacteria there. It's in the ear, it's going to get into the bloodstream, it's going to make its way to the lining of the spine, the meninges, it's going to cause meningitis. So it's a definite scenario, it's written about. Does that mean every case of an ear, my ear hurts, is Sakhanas Nefashos Docha Kol HaTorah Kula? I don't know, right? I do know. But I hopefully will share in a few moments. I'd like to build it up a little. So that's suffix sakana is a fascinating area. And there's a major machlokas that poskim had to handle these cases. Major machlokas that I found very intriguing. And one of the shitas personally found very, very useful. And to me, it's my guiding light. We'll get to that very quickly. It's going to be the first topic we're going to do. Then there's going to be the issue of das rofe. Is the word of the doctor. I could say this because I'm a doctor. There is a lot of truth to the fact that doctors are, I want to use a polite expression, confident, right? And I don't want to say arrogant, but confident is the word. And one thing a doctor would assume is that when it comes to shilas of what's Sakhanas Nefashos and what's not, that they should be the authority. And there's a lot of reasonableness to that assertion. The question is, what happens if Chazal told me in a sugya of Avodah Zarah on Daf Chavzayin, Chavav Chavzayin, tells me clearly a list of things that are beferish sakana. This is the sakana gav hayad, gav haregel, right? Maka shel chalal, any internal maka, safiga, whatever that is, we'll talk about it in a second. All these different things that are definitely sakanas. And my local brilliant doctor tells me that's definitely not a sakana. So who wins, right? The Slifkin debate, right? What happens in such cases, right? We're going to put perspective a little. I'm not going to get into Slifkin too much, but I think it definitely touches into this area, and we should have a little perspective on how it's nogea. So we're going to actually touch upon that. But lemaisa now, what do? I have a person, I'll never forget this one also, comes to me with a little scratch on the gav hayad. That's Sakhanas Nefashos. The doctor in me says, absolutely not. Don't go, don't be mechal shabbos midrabanan. Don't do anything, right? Wash it off, right? But Chazal tell me, and Shulchan Aruch Paskins, Gav Hayad, Gav HaRegel, Harayuk Maka Shechalal. It's a suffix, Sakhanas Nefashos. So what do? With that steer? What lemaisa do you do? So we're going to cover that in Yitz Hashem very soon. Das Chola, that's the next thing Shir Shabbos mentions. Das Chola is also Machriya. Lev Yodei Amaras Nafsha, right? Person knows. Person has Nemanos over the doctor, right? How far do we take that? That the funniest cases, hopefully we'll get to some of those, just in case things get a little under lull here. We'll hear some interesting cases of how a person is taking authority over a doctor. Where do we say that that's true, and where do we say, perhaps, that we draw the line? So we'll get back to that in a moment. Then, that's all ches and tes. Then, in the list, in Shmir Shabbos, this is Perek Lamed Beis, from Yud Aleph, in Seif Yud Aleph over here. So the Baal Shmir Shabbos gives you a whole list of Aleph to Tes Zayin of automatic sakanas. On this list are Aleph, Beis, Vav, and Zayin, right? Which are all Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Vav, and Zayin. Those are all out of that Gemara in Avodah Zarah that I mentioned, and for that reason they're on this list. Chazal told us that these are examples of sakana, and the rest basically are very good examples, and it's kedai to see this list. Any human being should see this list, any Jew who's concerned with Shabbos and doesn't have access to the doctor right away, doesn't have access even to the Rav, but a Rav certainly should be fully familiar with this because they're going to get asked shilas like this. As soon as somebody has any of these medical maladies, the Machaber, the Sefer, was good enough to put them here. These are all absolute medical emergencies until proven otherwise. So that's the utility of this list. They're all things that you should not ask shilas on. They go into the first category of the Aruch HaShulchan. So someone who's knocked unconscious, who's bitten by a wild dog, those kind of things, bad sunburn, sunstroke, right? All these things are potential sakanas nefashos for the simple reason that, medically speaking, they are absolutely sakanas nefashos. And the purpose of them being here is that these do not need any shilas, not from a rav and not from even a doctor. You should realize that all those are sakanas nefashos. So what we will focus on, however, is Aleph, Beis, Gimel, Vav, and Zayin. What about those? How quickly do those become automatic sakanas nefashos? And then finally, Yud Beis on the bottom, Yoledis. Yoledis is a category unto itself. Here is a primary area where a Rav will get tons and tons of shilas, both on Shabbos, before Shabbos, and is a case by itself, and we're going to handle that as a topic by itself. All the issues of pregnancy, labor, delivery, 3 days after, 7 days after, 30 days after, those are all categorizations, further subcategorizations that will be important to halacha l'maaseh shilas that come up. And again, we're going to try to give real-life cases to put perspective. So after that long-winded introduction, let's go to page 3 and start the real discussion. Okay, suffix or come. How l'maaseh do we handle these cases? I told you one, the kid with the sore throat. I told you another, the kid with the ear infection or the earache. And I'll tell you another, the kid with the cut. Kid has a cut, they come and they need stitches. How much of a dichoy of Shabbos is allowed in that scenario? What factors are going to be important? Does the fact that I could tell you again, in the case of a kid who has a cut that needs stitches, I certainly could come up with many scenarios where that becomes sakanas nefashos, right? Is it mean now, once I have any of these three scenarios, because suffix sakanas nefashos, these can become sakanas nefashos, that automatically it's docha kol Torah kula? So we all know that that's not true. There are two famous tshuvos on this issue. What's the most famous shaila lagabe, whether automatically any sakanas nefashos is docha yisurim or not? What's the famous topic? Anyone? Autopsy, right? Autopsy is where it all begins. Doing an autopsy, right? Why can't I make an argument that I'm not worried about nivul ames and kvura and all the other yisurim involved in an autopsy? Because ultimately the information I gain from this autopsy could someday possibly save a life. That's suffix sakanas nefashos for me to do the autopsy. Why is that not docha, the yisurim, involved in nivul ames and kvura, etc., and hanas ames? Why isn't that docha it? So, famous tshuva of the Nodi Bihuda and the Chasam Sofer on this issue. Chasam Sofer was asked about somebody that wanted to donate their body to science. Nodi Bihuda was asked Lamaisa about somebody doing an autopsy. So what's the answer? Somebody? This is very Yadua information? Maybe? Huh? Cholefaneinu, right? That's, they got the ball rolling, so to speak, right? That you can't just say any possible situation is going to lead to sakanas nefashos and therefore everything's docha. Because you have to draw a line somewhere, and they both write this in their tshuvos that this is the issue. You can't just let the thing go wild. There has to be some type of order. So the phrase they used, right, they use a slightly different phrase, each of them, but cholefaneinu became the understanding. But that soon proved not sufficient. Cholefaneinu is not enough. Why not? It's shy. Why is cholefaneinu not an adequate definition? What cholefaneinu literally means is that the only thing that's going to nefashos is if I mamish have the sick person, the dying person, the endangered person standing there right before me, right? Or I can be in contact with them, right? That's not enough. Because what if there's a real matzav that's not yet afflicted the particular individual, right? It has afflicted some. They're being taken care of. Now I got others, right? It's an infectious disease. Cholera might be a good example, right? That's the example all the poskim use because of the famous epidemic that took place around the time they were all dealing with the shayla. Can I view sakana lefaneinu with the same intensity as cholefaneinu? Answer, obviously, yes. Chazanish. Chazanish is the one who makes this famous. Chazanish in two places, in his Perush in Olos and in Hilchos Treifos. In both those places, he discusses this. I think it's Perek Hey. And he says, it's not just, the you know the Behud and Chasasov, it didn't mean literally Chol Lefeneinu, Sakana Lefeneinu. Good. Is that adequate? Is that good enough? Does that cover all the cases? No, it does not. It clearly does not. Because sometimes, right, I'm worried about something that could happen. Right? I'll give you a classic example where the Tzitz Eliezer and Rosh Shlomo Zalman argue over this case. One passing's one way, one passing's the other way. Let's say you were beheter, able to drive, right? Real Sakanas Nefashos. You drove the person to the hospital. And now you get there. Can you turn your car off? Can you turn off the car? Is there any Sakanas Nefashos involved? What's the Yisr? Mechaber, right? Whatever. They take it very seriously. Can I turn the car off? Why would I have to? Why don't I just leave it on? So Shlomo Zalman writes, well, suffix Sakanas Nefashos to leave it on. And Tzitz Eliezer says, absolutely not. So what's that argument?
What, you might need to drive the Chol to another hospital?
Right, so if that were the case...
destroy the car by leaving it on?
Right, so what Shlomo Zalman seems to be saying, and the way that Tzitz Eliezer took him on, is that maybe it'll explode, and be Sakanas Nefashos for the people around. Right. So anyone know anything about cars here? Is that a realistic fear? I really asked, and I was told no.
Will it destroy the car?
Gas.
Okay, so it's only money.
No, I'm saying that you need to drive the Chol. I'm just saying you need to drive the Chol to another hospital within the next.
Right. If that's an issue, that's pshita l'chuli alma. If you need the car to be available, l'chuli alma. No discussion. Talking about you don't need the car again. It was your off day. Personal example. I lived in Eretz Yisrael for 2 years. I was not a doctor in Eretz Yisrael, right? I did other things. But where I got out of the neighborhood, I was a doctor. So I tended to get all the emergency cases, especially since there aren't a lot of doctors around in certain areas. And where I was, someone comes running into the house. It was unbelievable. The kid somehow got scalded, hands and feet. It was just unbelievable. Sakanas Nefashos. Grabbed the kid, I put him in the car, and I dashed off the 45-minute trip to Hadassah, you know, as fast as I could. I get there, and there's no way I'm needed for further emergencies. There's no way I'm leaving the hospital. If we get into Chazara Mehatzala, you'll understand why this was the case. I had no option of going back, right? It's a little complicated why, but this would be a case where I don't have the option of going back. I'm going to be staying in the hospital the whole Shabbos, end of story. Do I turn my car off or not, right? In the end, I would understand Rosh Shlomo Zalman to tell me definitely turn it off, right? And the Tzitz Eliezer would tell me no.
Shlomo Zalman is saying it's going to blow off.
That's his fear.
But it's not.
Well, he certainly considered it would be, right? Question is, does it matter? Let's whether it's true or not, he considered it, he was told by his experts that it would a possibility, right? I'll tell you something, let's say, just to throw it, make it more real life. Rabbi Neuberger, when he deals with this Shaila, right, I know that what he tells people, or what he's told me, I should say, is that there is, even if you don't believe that there's a sakana, the car's going to explode, there is a potential sakana that somebody's going to jump into your car, go for a joyride, and hurt somebody. And that element of sakana.
Isn't that possible that your car's off?
If you leave the keys in the ignition, right?
If you just left the keys on the seat.
Well, but this is a more of a possibility, because there's a running car there with the doors open. So it's more of a temptation.
Sure.
Either way, what the particular sakana is not the point. The point is, there are cases like this. The other case is the whole Chazara Mehatzala thing. Picking up a telephone, if you're a doctor, in your house, all of these questions share one thing. They're all going to involve the earache, the sore throat, picking up the telephone, turning off the car, returning from Hatzala. All these involve potential sakanas that don't yet exist. It's not a chol lefeneinu, it's not a sakana lefeneinu. It's just the potential for pikuach nefesh to come about. Nothing is lefeneinu. Do we hold, right, that we never worry about such things because it doesn't meet the threshold of the Noda Bihuda, the Chasan Sofer, or for that matter, the Chasan Ish? Is it after that, that's it? Now, holchin achar harov? So, according to the Tzitz Eliezer and the Binyan Sion, yes, that's how they paskin. They paskin like this. They say, if it's not mamish lefaneinu, but it's just the potential that it will happen. If we're dealing with that type of sakana, their psak is now holchin achar rov. Ein holchin achar rov is reserved for at most chol lefaneinu sakana lefaneinu. Anything short of that, they would say you got to go by the rov. Therefore, in all those cases, they're going to go the chumrah, right? Can I say that rov kids with otitis media that are not treated within 12 hours are going to get meningitis? That's a joke. Not even close. Rove kids with sore throats can end up with rheumatic fever and end up with heart disease. No way. It's about 3% of the population a year get rheumatic fever altogether, untreated. It's a joke to them. The car is going to explode. Someone's going to steal it. That's rove? Probably not, right? So their approach is very straightforward, and this is how they possibly. Absolutely.
So then they
However,
nothing.
This approach could be very difficult. It could be very, very difficult because there are going to definitely be situations where it doesn't hit Rove, but medically speaking, a significant sakana would be, in my view, almost 1%, 5%, 10%. Oh my God. If you do something to a patient with a 10% risk, that's like unbelievable, right? If you don't do something to stop a 10% risk, that's unbelievable, even if it's not lefaneinu. So there is another approach, Rosalma Zalman's approach, which I personally favor. And in my experience, I noticed that many people do it. Lefiani Estaiti, this is the approach I'm reading into. It's not the Farish, but I'm reading into a tshuva that we're going to see from Moshe Feinstein as well. And I would assume that it is probably the more common and popular approach. And it goes as follows. It's something very similar to something Rav Shechter, we just mentioned a few moments ago, emphasizes when it comes to assessing sakanos and getting yourself involved in a sakana, right? What's the general klal? General klal is that you're not supposed to put yourself, you shouldn't get involved in a sakana. Okay. So if there's a greater than 50% chance of a sakana, you're crazy if you get involved in it. It's totally aser, you know, you want to be a daredevil, you're a nut. Forget it. We will not let you do that. And then Rav Shechter has an approach of the in-between categories where it's up to the individual. Part of that is predicated on the following principle. Kevin d'dasha b'rabim, shomer p'saim Hashem. What does that mean? That means as follows. What's considered a sakana l'maisa in the real world? Well, you could tell from the corollary to this halach. In other words, what type of situation am I not allowed to get myself into? Right? Anything that doesn't make it to Kevin Dejashiri Rabin Shomer Psalm Hashem. So, in other words, does society consider this a sakana to the nefesh, right? Whether it's here now or not. If society does, right? In other words, the way Rav Shlomo Zalman puts it is beautiful, and it's really the way I handle every situation on Shabbos. And this is the starting point for practical application of Hilchos Shabbos Legabi Refuah, which is, if this were Tuesday and not Shabbos, how would I handle this situation? Would I have the same sense of urgency? In other words, so in my halach l'maisa questions, and it's going to be case by case. So the kid that comes to me with a sore throat, what would I tell parents on a Tuesday if they come to me? You must see a doctor within a certain span of time, otherwise you're putting your kid's life at risk. Do I have that sense? If I do, and that's my mindset, then I docha kol ha'terah kulo, right? Chutz me the big three, right? If I don't, then that is not a sakana. The Sicilians criticized Rosh Hashanah Zalman's approach because he thought it was too subjective. But the truth of the matter is, I think it is subjective, but it's meant to be, because it has to be on a case-by-case basis. And Lamaisa, it really holds up, I would say, for the opinion of the doctors, would much prefer that one approach it this way in terms of the ultimate dangers to people. Because you have to get used to it. You know, it's something that a Rav who's dealing with a situation will often then, at that point, certainly get a doctor involved, right? Because you need a doctor for this assessment. If you don't have a doctor, then you're going to always be having to, I think, suffic l'kula in terms of the shaila. I don't know, and, you know, we would have to ask, and everyone would have to ask the posik that they're comfortable with, do people really follow the Tzitz Eliezer's approach of waiting for a Rav in a situation like this? Because I think it could end up, l'fiyani slightly, being a very dangerous approach. Rav Shlomo Zalman is a very, very reasonable approach, and it's held up by other gedolim, and I think that it's the surest way to handle these situations very well. So that, for example, when I'm, let's say, home on a Shabbos and I'm not on call and the phone rings, so if I'm not on call, I'm not going around answering the phone thinking I'm having somebody call me with a life-threatening illness. I'm not going to pick it up on Shabbos. However, if I know that I am on call, that would color the situation differently, and I would certainly pick up every phone, right? Because there it's really possible that someone's not able to page me, it happens often enough, that it would allow me to pick up the phone. Okay, any questions on Suffolk?
Don't we try to evaluate things with regards to turning off the car and stuff like that? Being down there to the situation by Rosh Hashanah, breaking Shabbos, that we're afraid that they're not going to do it anymore if you don't let them do things you
want. Oh, we're going to get to that. So, right, right. That really becomes a major discussion. It's a machlokas, it seems, the Ramah and the Taz over this type of issue, right? And when we get, we're sort of like just doing categorization. When we're going to get to, we're coming back to the turning off the car. We haven't really done the issue yet. And to what, once you've categorized now, what can you do and what should you do? That's where that question goes. We're going to get to that in Yitz Hashem, if I pick up the pace a little. So, turning to page 4, right? Das Chola. Now, Das Chola is another one. I give you up in the right-hand corner over there, a quote from the Mishnah Berurah, quotes the Radbaz, right? Bottom line is, Ima Chola Omer Tzarech Ani L'Truf V'Plonis, V'Rofa Omer Ein Tzarech, Shomin L'Chola. The Chola gets superiority over the doctor. Right? What is that based on? Lev Yodea Maris Nafsho. A person knows their body better than even a doctor. Right? So what does that really apply to? If you look in Dibur Halacha, I'm not going to read it, but just quickly looking over to the left, he quickly puts in the common sense statement, which is probably on everyone's mind already. There's got to be limits to this, right? You know, there are certain cases, right? I'll give you an example of real life cases. A patient comes, or a person in the neighborhood comes over, and they're going like this. This is a real life case. I'm only giving you actual cases that I've experienced. If you're going like this, I have a seizure disorder, I'm having a seizure now. That's what they're saying to me. So, therefore, I need emergency medication, I need an IV, I need something. So, I'm a doctor and I know that it's not possible to have a bilateral seizure and be conscious. It just does, it's an impossibility. You're not having a seizure. And there's a specific diagnosis here, and he's wrong. So, we're gonna say, oh, the Chola knows Maris Nafsho, like, that's it? Of course not. So the Bir Lach already says that. He says if it's a Mesuyam, if it's a Chola that's a definition, and we're talking about real medicine, Pshita, you listen to the doctor. So when are we talking about listening to the Chola? He has insights into his goof. He knows, like, the doctor might ridicule. I'll give you a real-life example. I had many, but I have to cut down on my examples so that we can get through more. This is my favorite, because it happened to me. And it taught me a lesson that I'll never forget. So, got to be careful who you invite over for lunch. So it was Shabbos lunch, and I had a very good friend over, and a young guy in his 30s, and actually I think he was even 20. He was in his 30s already. And we're sitting there having lunch, and he's usually a very gregarious person, very talkative, and suddenly I'm looking at him, and he's quiet. And I go, oh, everything all right? He goes, and he's going like this, and he goes, my right arm's uncomfortable. Okay, now he had no history of any problems. I go, really? You know, maybe you want to go to the emergency room? How do you feel about it? I don't think it's anything. So now I'm a pediatric cardiologist, but I do know some of the signs of adult heart attacks. And one of them is arm pain, right? Maybe classically to the left, but it could be the right, whatever. So I say, you know what? Down the block, 5 houses away from me, is my chavrusa, the adult cardiologist. Let's go over and run it by him. So I already gave away too much information. I hope no one knows what I'm talking about, because he had a bad day today. Because we go over and he assesses the patient, and he says, based on his history, no risk factors really, no previous anything, just a little right arm pain. It can wait, it's nothing, don't do anything. So come back to my house. I felt okay, I covered myself, right? We went to the adult cardiologist. And I'm still looking at the guy, and he's holding his arm. And finally I say to him, I say, did you ever have this feeling before? Is this, he says, no, this is, there's something different about this. I really think there's something going on. So Baruch Hashem, Lev Yodeh Maas Nafsho, I listened to him. And we went right to the emergency room. It turned out, as you can guess, he's having a heart attack. He was mamish having a heart attack. This is a classic example of where he knew that there was something in his goof that was off, that the doctor just couldn't appreciate, no matter how much he knew. And this is a doctor very experienced in assessing coronary diseases, what he did for a living. And yet, there was something here that was an advantage to the Chola. And you could think of many other examples like this, of where the Chola does. but it's limited to those type of sensations. In general, we're not going to assume that the chola has a medical knowledge advantage over a doctor. Another example to really bring home, a very important kula of Rav Shlomo Zalman. If you look at the Nishmas of Ram, on the bottom paragraph on the right, he also points to the following chumrah, I call it, of the Magen of Ram, that says the following. Let's say you have a person who's like, and this was another case that happened to him, total hypochondriac, the guy like every day is complaining about something, and you know that the guy's like just out to lunch. And nevertheless, you got to listen to what he has to say. But he looks perfect. He looks fine. You're convinced he's just like hysterical. So according to the Magen Avraham, for a chola to be the one to determine that a situation is sakanas nefashos, there's got to be some type of change in his appearance. There has to be something about him, something that makes you believe that he's really sick. But a total bari against the doctor, right, is not going to win. If the doctor says, you look healthy, you're fine, or if there's no doctor around and he looks totally healthy, you can't necessarily be Mechal Shabbos. So that could be a very dangerous chumrah in the wrong hands, right? So right away, even the Chasam Sofer puts a perspective on it. The Chasam Sofer says, hold it. This may be true, that I cannot be Mechal Shabbos for a guy like that, who's the healthy-looking individual, who's just complaining, and the doctor says he's fine, or he looks to me fine. However, we can allow him, right? It's talking about Yom Kippur, right? He wants to, we can allow him to do it himself, right? It's Chasam Sofer's addition, right? He could do it himself. What was the Shaila Chasam Sofer was asked was about a woman who unfortunately had a situation, a Yibam situation, to a Katan. And she said, or she got word across to the Poseg that I can't take this. If I have to wait till he's Gadol and I don't get to get married, it's going to be Sakanas Nefashos. That was the Shaila Chasam Sofer's asked. So he went the chumrah on it because he said, you know, she looks fine, and we're going to worry that if she doesn't get married, despite the chiyuv yibum or something, you know, we're going to finagle out of this. That doesn't hold up. And he based it on the sugya with achilas basar kodesh, that we wouldn't allow achilas basar kodesh to a woman in the Beis Hamikdash, also because it seems to say because the miracle occurred in the Beis Hamikdash, one of the 10 nisim in the Beis Hamikdash was that no one ever had a miscarriage there. So the Chasam Sofer says, however, we would allow, in that context, is where he says, we would allow the person to do it themselves. Comes along with Shlomo Zalman and he says, what about the following case, which really happened to me? A guy like this, who looks fine, right, and I'm positive he's fine, but I'm having chest pain, I need to go to the emergency room. So according to the Magen Avraham, I can't be Mechal Shabbos for that guy. According to the Chasam Sofer, at most, I can let him drive himself. So here's the guy who's like, you know, feeling he's dying, and telling me he's having a heart attack, asking me for help, and I'm not allowed to be Mechal Shabbos for him. So Shlomo Zalman says, hold it. That's totally an erroneous assumption. That is not what the Magen Avraham, the Chasam Sofer, are talking about. What are they talking about? They're talking about a case where somebody is asking for, and this is, I don't think, is popularized. People are familiar with the Chumrah, but not the Kula. The context of the Chasam Sofer and the Magen Avraham is somebody asking to eat Basar Kodesh and somebody asking to get married, Mishum Sakanas Nefashos. So in that context, activities that for most normal people are not Sakanas Nefashos, right? So there you can apply the type of tzak that the Chasam Sofer does. But if it's a medical issue, a genuine medical issue, even if you think the guy is really just making it up, you cannot take a chance, right? And I think this is Rav Shlomo Zalman, the Shitasa. He's applying, right, the whole idea of Kevin Dasha Biram, Mishom Ripsayim Hashem, and that assessment. Meaning, and this is what I did, on a Tuesday, if a guy's coming to me, I think he's really, 99%, he's not, nothing's wrong with him. But he tells me he's having chest pain, right? He's 26 years old, right? Very low incidence of a heart attack in a 26-year-old. Baruch Hashem, right? Everyone in this room is probably in good shape, right? And he's telling me this. So on a Tuesday, I would still tell him to go to the emergency room. So if I would do that on a Tuesday, I'm going to do it on a Shabbos. And Rav Shlomo Zalman says, that's his psak. So that when it comes to a real medical problem like this, we don't say the chumrah of the Magen Avraham, the Chasam Sofer, that's really reserved for a guy who would say, you know, like the ingrown toenail case, or a guy who says, if I don't get to eat this treifus, I'm going to die, you know, something like that. So in that context of something that's really never going to happen, That's where the chumers are. But the real approach, I think, is Rav Shlomo Zalman's approach, which is right over here in Shulchan Shlomo on the bottom of page 4. Page 5. Page 5, now we're going to enter. I'm assuming any questions on anything we've said? When is this going until? 245? 240. All right. Das Rofe. How about Das Rofe? Is Das Rofe always the way out? Let's say you're the Rav of the town, you're the Rav of the shul, and you have these situations coming to you. Usually, in my neighborhood, the sequence is usually that. For the most part, right? Adam by Rabbi Neuberger. Rabbi Neuberger gets first crack at all the shilas, right? And then if it's Davar Pashut, in terms of the medical aspects, he'll take care of it even himself. But if he thinks it needs a medical assessment, he sends somebody to some doctor to help out. Okay. So is the doctor always going to be that helpful, and is that really making this whole decision simple? Maybe whatever the doctor says. He says it's kind of yes, he says it's kind of no. So there's three major reasons that I will contend that that's not always true. Three Lemaisa reasons. They're all on page 5. Reason number one is, and this is a little section from Rabbi Tendler's something. I don't remember even where I got it from. Could have been his discussion of mitzitza or jaundice. But that's the context where I've heard him speak about it. He likes to emphasize that doctors will sometimes, uneducated doctors will sometimes, uneducated in Torah doctors, will sometimes laugh at the approach to bris milah and the shita of molin to hold off because of physiologic jaundice from doing a bris milah. And whereas, you know, the very smart doctor realizes physiologic jaundice is a natural event. It's just going to go away. It is not a sakana according to medicine in the slightest. It's not a potential sakana. However, according to halacha, it is, right? According to halacha, at least to many in, many poskim, even physiologic jaundice is a reason not to do a bris. So Rabbi Tendler likes to emphasize the point that the halachic standard of risk benefit is set differently than the medical one, right? There's a much lower threshold for being doche isurim if you assess al pi din than if you do al pi medicine. That's number one, why the doctor's opinion might not always be the most useful. For example, we're going to see this case of, let's say a person has a dental abscess, right? So a real abscess in the mouth. So al pi din, that's a makah shel halal, which according to Chazal is aromatic sakonis nefashos. But if you ask most doctors, they would say, it's not really sakonis nefashos. You can hold it off, take antibiotic, right? I know you have it. The dentist examines, says, take antibiotic. We'll do the definitive procedure, which is to drain it. We'll do that after Shabbos, just take antibiotics. So that's a little difference of opinion in there, whether it's really sakonis nefashos or not. So that's number one. Number two, which I find very, very frequently, is the middle section over there, which is the status of a muflag, of a mumcha, of a baki. Very often, I get asked, Shilas as a doctor, and I'm a pediatric cardiologist, that, and adult cardiology questions I can handle, but that have nothing to do with anything that I've really focused on for the past 15 years. So, for example, GYN questions, or questions that have to do with geriatrics. You know, something that I feel very unqualified for. And this is going to be the case with many, many doctors. You get a good broad education in medical school, no doubt. You try to keep up as much as you can, but the truth of the matter is, there'll be many times where the doctor really has no significant knowledge advantage as a mumcha. So that will always color his statements, and hopefully he'll be a good, honest doctor. He'll hopefully always be upfront and honest and say, you know, I don't really know. And that often you find yourself in that position. And the final reason why Das Rofe is not just the simple way out of this entire discussion is the situation that arises when we have a conflict, again, between what contemporary doctors will tell you is a fact in terms of Sakana, and what Chazal told you, and that whole Slifkin issue. So, what I wanted to do now is spend just no more than 5 minutes on that discussion to put perspective on it and show where Halach Lamais it actually has application. Because I like to do it because it's an interesting discussion. I think there's a lot of lack of total information out there on what went on with the whole Slifkin debate, and I want to put a little perspective on it. So, what's the story? What was the debate about? Let's get that out of the way. So, to my understanding, the real debate in terms of where there's any type of controversy, right? I'm eliminating controversy from our discussion. Why? Because the controversy really is over a different element to this discussion. The controversy is really over How do I view the fact that there will be things that we're going to see on Avodah Zarah, Chavav Chav Zayin, that are certainly not true to the best of medical science's ability today? How do I deal with that? So the first question is, how did that happen? How did Chazal get it wrong, quote unquote? So you can look at it basically two ways, and the Rishonim have looked at it in basically two ways. And that's why Rabbi Slifkin has supported what he has said with statements of Rishonim and Achronim, right? And nevertheless, we'll see why there might be some controversy and contention with what he did. And that is, the two shitas are as follows. One shita is that, as on the bottom of page 5, that little section from the Chasam Sofer. The Chasam Sofer, this is a very nice, neat little section. It comes from the issue that I think you discussed recently, definition of death and end of life, where he makes a very, very nice, neat statement. The Chasam Sofer says, Chazal made medical or scientific statements on the basis of three possible sources of information. Halakha Moshe Mesinai Mesorah, they were Dorish something in the Torah, or they went to the local or contemporary experts, whether it be someone from Chazal or from outside of Chazal, of the time. Those are the three sources of information. Now, that's good. Everybody agrees to that. I don't think there's going to be an argument over that those were the sources of the information. Now the question is, they paskined on the basis of that, right? So they defined, for example, in the Chasam Sofer's example, they defined death, right? And the Chasam Sofer gives you the definition of death. I'm not getting into this, that's for sure, right? Not right now. But he defines death, and he says, no matter what you tell me, Bizmaneinu, his time, we have the definition of Chazal, that's the end of the story. Okay, good. So he's taking a stand to some degree. But it might depend on, how could it possibly be that there would be any change in the reality? So the two basic approaches are Nishtana HaTeva, which is the majority approach. Clearly the majority approach is to say Nishtana HaTeva, which is not a crazy idea. It is not a, to me, it's a very rational approach. And then the approach that's often said in the name of Rav Avram ben Arambam and Rav Shiragam and Rav Hirsch, and these are the ones that Rabbi Slifkin quotes, that no, they were really using in these cases that third source of information, scientific experts, and they weren't as good as our contemporary scientific experts. So they were wrong, right? Now, you can't argue that Gedolei Yisrael had that opinion, right? No one's going to say, oh, Rabbi Slifkin, you're in Chayrim, or we're going to ban your books because you're following certain Gedolim. The Rambam says it in one context even. So what's the controversy? The controversy is all in the presentation, right? That was the problem. How do you present this? So if you take a look at page 7 for a second, over there, this sefer, Shmir Saguf HaNefesh, very nice sort of gathering of these issues. In it, Lerna discusses this issue, and he comes to it, and if someone wants to get a feel for it, it's a good place to take a look, is that sefer. So he comes to the end, and he mentions that the Nishmas Avram, the definitive work on Halacha of Refuah in everything, it is definitely the, in my opinion, the number one, right? So in there, he also discusses this issue, and in it, he presents both sides of this issue that I just said, and Rav Shlomo Zalman, who from time to time will critique Nishmas Avram Sefer, critiqued that particular place, and he said, just do me one favor, when you give the opinion of Rav Avram ben Harambam and that side that says that maybe the expert opinion is better today, or something to that effect, give it as a yesh omrim. In effect, Rav Shlomo Zalman was paskin that this is the yesh omrim, the Nishtana Teva, that's going to be the majority, seems that way, right? Certainly this is the way he's often presented, Rav Shlomo Zalman, as paskining the Shaila in this statement, that he held, look, there are these two approaches, but you should realize this is the yesh omrim, right? They could say it, they said it, right? But the majority opinion, the psak, at the end of the day, is that we don't hold that way. That it's really Nishtana HaTeva that's going to win. And the majority poskim seem to go that way, and that's the end of the controversy, right? Okay, so the controversy was, did Rabbi Slifkin present all this in the accurate fashion, or did he lean too much towards that other side, not as yesh omrim? Okay. What we're interested in is, at the end of the day, whether it is Nishtana HaTeva, or it's the other reason, everybody is awake and using their five senses and notices that these things, in fact, are different, right? That the Gav Hayad and the Gav HaRegel are no longer a sakana automatically. that every makah shel halal is not automatically a sakana. So what do you do? How do you paskin? So do we say that it's automatically going to be whatever Chazal said, like the Chasam Sofer seems to intimate? Chasam Sofer seems to say, Chazal said it, end of story, I don't care. So if you look on page 6, I gave you 3 prevalent opinions on how to handle these types of shailas in different contexts. The easiest one is the Chazon Ish. The easiest and the most machmir. Potentially the most machmir. Chazon Ish says, you know, the way it works, and this might be the way the Chasam Sofer was going, is that there are epics of civilization, or epics of humanity. The first 2,000 was Tohu Vavohu. The second 2,000 was
Torah.
And the third, Yemos HaMashiach. Right. So he says, it was during Torah time that Hashem revealed what Torah should be, right? The Chazon Ish is talking in the context of Treifos. And he wants to explain how, despite the fact that Bizmanenu, the Yudches Treifos don't hold up either way, look, you know, what's a Treifa is not a Treifa, what's not a Treifa is a Treifa, right? And yet, we're going to stick to the original Yudches. So the Chazon Ish's approach is, the reason for that is that Hashem, right, revealed purposely to this degree during the Zman HaTorah, when Torah was being established, it ended with Sof Hara, right, that this would be the reality known to man, no matter what the reality might change to be, so that this would be the halacha psuka, end of story. So that for the Chazon Ish, it sounds like exactly the Chasam Sofer also, that it really is, even if the reality changes and we admit the physical reality is different, once Chazal made a statement, that's the way it's going to be, la halacha, because that's the era of halacha and Torah. Others have a different approach, including Rav Moshe Feinstein. Rav Moshe Feinstein, which is the tshuva on top, has a very different approach. He says the following. He was talking in the context of an infertility treatment, without getting too much into detail, which dealt with psua daka. Psua daka is any puncture, let's say, of the testicles would be considered a psua daka, because, Chazal tell us, it would lead to infertility. The shaila Rav Moshe had is that somebody wanted an infertility evaluation and treatment that required the puncturing of the testicle. So what do you do now, right? The metzias is that bizmanenu, the whole treatment will, the whole psua daka is going to lead to fertility, or at least possibly lead to fertility. And yet we're going to say now this person is going to be considered a psua daka because they have the procedure. So Rav Moshe goes into a whole analysis of our sugya, and he analyzes the, again in the context of treifos, and he has a completely different take than a Chazon Ish. He says as follows. He says, just compare treifos when it comes to kashrus and treifos when it comes to tzicha. And he says that you'll see the way that's handled is very differently. Treifos when it comes to behemos and kashrus, there it's true that whatever the original count of treifos, that's all there is. However, when it comes to tzicha, the Rambam says something else. When it comes to deciding whether somebody's chayv misa for tzicha and it's an issue of treifos, the Rambam says you go and ask the doctors of your zman what's considered a treifa and what's not. So Rav Moshe says, what's going on? I thought treifos is fixed and set. These are the treifos. So he says, and he develops the following approach. He says, well, the difference is halacha l'moshe m'sinai. When it comes to the treifos of behemoth, that was halacha l'moshe m'sinai. That is fixed. When there's a decision that's based on halacha l'moshe m'sinai, like treifos, the statement in the Gemara also says, as well as telling you that it's not going to survive a year, so it also, the Gemara mentions, it's also halacha l'moshe m'sinai. So in that context, whenever a metzias is described that is labeled as halacha l'moshe m'sinai, that stays and is immutable. However, if it's not halacha l'moshe m'sinai, then nishtana teva, nishtana din. And Rav Moshe is open to the possibility, as he paskined in this case of the infertility treatment, mutter to do it, because in our time it's clearly not that way, and it wasn't halacha l'moshe m'sinai. It wasn't that a psua daka of this type with the puncture, adarab, it's going to cause fertility, not infertility. So he's willing to say nishtana teva, nishtana din. The stipler, which is the middle piece, Shirin Shel Torah, he has a closer to Rav Moshe, another approach. He also says that we're going to also always, certainly in Halacha Moshe B'Sinai, but he adds any time that Chazal are defining what the Torah is saying, that's going to be unchangeable, no matter what happens to the Teva. However, he will say that if it's an area of observation and an area of Metzius description, there, Nishtana Teva can be Nishtana Adin also. So both Rav Moshe and the stipler lean towards this possibility. How does this translate into real life situations, and what's going to be the way we're going to get focused on it, or why is it of concern to us? So it's going to be a concern to us in all these situations that fit the sugya on page 8. Now, before we get there, I wanted to just, sorry, turn back to page 7. On page 7, the other thing that Rosh Lama Zalman says, after Rosh Lama Zalman said that we should put the Rav Avram ben Arambam's opinion into the category of Yesh Omrim, so as a proof, as a backing for that approach, one of the statements he made is very nogea to us, and it's the last two lines. He says, "Ubifrat shebi'inyan ne Shabbos, yesh matirin melech Shabbos, af sheledas harofim ein shum sakana." So he starts the ball wrong. He makes a comment. He's not saying it's his psak. He's saying he knows that there are poskim that would hold you can be totally mechal Shabbos daraisa for issues, even though the doctors absolutely will tell you these are not sakanas nefashas. What's the basis for those poskim? So one approach is they're holding like the Chazon Ish, they're holding like the Chasam Sofer. End of story. If you hold that way, then it could be that that's going to be your psak. That therefore, lamaisa, any maka to the back of the hand, the back of the arm, any internal sore, you have a blister in your mouth, right? You have some type of situation like that where any doctor would tell you, don't be mechal Shabbos for it, but according to the straightforward approach over here, you could do. So one approach is he's just following them. The other approach is that I wanted you to see Rav Kook and the Maram Shik. They come in and they add another dimension to this whole discussion, which also becomes Nogea Lamaisa, which is they say like this. So we're not going to necessarily say like the Chazon Ish, which is ignore what the doctors say completely. However, we're going to accept what they say, Lakula, only Lakula. So if the doctors say this is a Sakana, even though Chazal said it's not a Sakana, we're going to really take seriously what they say. What's the context of the discussion of Rav Kook? Mitzitza, right? So there again, Rav Kook is another example. He criticizes the approach of the person bringing up the issue. He says, you know, you come and you tell me, oh, Chazal didn't know what they were talking about. They don't understand medical science. You come that way, we're not going to listen to a word you have to say. That was the beginning of the tshuva. Then Rav Kook says, but if you come in and you say, look, perhaps, you know, with the proper respect, nishtana hateva, and you're telling me that there's a sakana bizmaneina to doing mitzitza, then it's open to discussion. Open to discussion. His conclusion, however, is, just to let you know what he says in the context of mitzitza, is at most, what a doctor says is a suffix sakana. That's the most we'll give them. Why? He goes through a whole little discussion about the way doctors work. It's interesting. He says they work on empiric evidence. They work on probabilities. And in 2009, they'll tell you one thing. And 2010, a different doctor will tell you another thing. Is that anyone's experience? Right? You get that sense? A lot of people think that. Because, like, it's always they're telling you what foods are dangerous, what foods are not dangerous, what foods are healthy. And that's always flipping around. But it's really not as dramatic as everybody thinks it is that that really happens. But nevertheless, Rav Kook certainly felt that way, that it was at best a suffix, and the Ram Shik says the same thing, and therefore they held that while the words of Chazal are vadai, if they say something's a sakana, it's going to be a sakana, a vadai, right? So therefore, Rav Kook paskins on mitzitza, they told me if I don't do mitzitza, it's a sakana, vivadaot, for sure. The medical people tell me if I do mitzitza, it is a sakana, I think I'll take the vadai, right, and throw out the suffix. That's the way he paskins on mitzitza. But it comes over to our area as well. And Lamaisa, what it means is that if you're following their approach, you will come out Lakula always. So either way, we'll say, if somebody holds it's a Suffolk, Sakana Stefashos, that's the way we'll pass it. Where this comes up, now quickly just take a look at page 8. Page 8 is the sugya, I'm not going to read through it. Just that you know it exists, is, I said the wrong darkin, it's Chavzayin Chavches, this is where the Gemara mentions all the different Sakanos, because you're not supposed to be Misrape from an Ovid Avodah Zarah in any of these areas, right? We don't want to have Sakanas Nefashos. So anything that's a possible Sakanas Nefashos, the Gabe that, is also Sakanas Nefashos, the Gabe Shabbos. And here's where it mentions Makah Shel Chalal, any internal Makah, a Makah on the hand or the feet, a fever, right? That's some mutant, some type of fever, that's going to really need a lot of explanation. Safdina, which is some type of bleeding, internal bleeding. And then it gives a whole bunch of other ones on the bottom, all these different conditions. So the question is, what happens to Lamaisa when these conditions really present themselves? So how often do we see Sabidna and these other things? So if you turn to page 9, The Shulchan Aruch right away puts a little bit of perspective on the whole thing, because he gives the full development to the Rishonim. The Rishonim modified that Gemara a little. There's a Ran and a Ramban that are important. The Ran modifies the Makah Shel Chalal. Does this mean any internal injury? What if a guy comes to me and says, I have a stomach ache? Right? That's a Makah Shel Chalal. Your stomach is internal, and you have an ache. So is that Chal Shabbos for every stomach ache? Seems crazy. So right away the Ran says, and it's the Rashba, and it's Rabbeinu Yonah, they all say, it's got to be some kilkul. There's got to be some actual, not just an ache, or a pain, right? Some aches and pains are subconscious to the fascias. But usually the doctor's going to know, right? But to be automatic, which is what these are, Chazal telling you this, that you shouldn't need to ask a doctor, these are for non-doctors, right? And the Shulchan Aruch is talking to non-doctors. If you have any of these, it's automatically subconscious to the fascias. So right away, the Ran limited that to some actual type of kilkul. And then the Ramban said, he throws in the most important caveat. He says, of course, if a doctor tells you that this is not a sakana in the context of Makah Shel Chalal, then it's not. Okay, so Shulchan Aruch comes in. Paskins over here in Shin Chav Ches, right? First he gives you the baseline halacha and Sif Hey, right? Makah She'ena Shel Chalal, any Makah that's not Chalal, the baseline is go get a Baki, right? Unless you think the guy's really dying in front of you, right? Majority of Shalal is going to be, like Derech HaShulchan said in Sif Beis, ask a Baki, find out, get a doctor. That's probably one of the most useful things a Rav could do in all these shaylas, unless mamish, we have sakanas nefashos, call 911. But if it's anything short of that, you're not sure that this could be sakanas nefashos, right? But the patient seems stable to some degree. You must get a doctor. And there's got to be doctors in every neighborhood. And do your best to get a doctor who's well-versed in the field that you're dealing with. So that's Seif He. Seif Beis, Gimel Dalet. So let's go to Gimel and Dalet. That's where it has the Makah Shel Chalal, Dahainu mina shinayim v'lifnim, includes the teeth. That's a whole little discussion in the Gemara over there. Teeth yes, teeth no. We go, it's a vay delifshta, we go kula. So the teeth are in. So this really opens things up for the dentists, right? According to this, straight reading of the Shulchan Aruch, any maka, any kilko, right? A cavity, right? Presumably. That's not true. Presumably, right? Of anything from the teeth and in is going to be automatic sakanas nefashos. I don't need to yes a baki. That's what differentiates it from halacha. Hey, just go sakanas nefashos b'machal shabbos deraisa, right? So right away the Shulchan Aruch himself qualifies with the Ran about michushim ein dikrin maka. Good, paskins that way, and then he qualifies it in Dalid aval kishiyodim makirin ba'osel choli. Then the doctors have the final word. So good, that's the Ramban in Tursa Adam. So we've covered all the very common scenarios, right? People always have aches and pains internally. Now at least I know it's not an automatic sakanas nefashos. I'm not automatically going to be Mechal Shabbos for every toothache, for every issue that is internal from the teeth and in. So I will certainly get a Baki to assess it, and if they tell me it is sakanas nefashos, pshita that it's sakanas nefashos. The majority of these cases will not be sakanas nefashos. Then in Vav, the Shulchan Aruch does something very useful. He tells me that the maka al gav hayad and gav haregel is like a maka shel chalal. So now I took care of the other big category that people always have problems with. They think that, oh, automatically it's a sakanas nefashos. Well, Shulchan Aruch is telling you, no, that's just like maka shel chalal. These two categories are pretty nicely taken care of right by the Shulchan Aruch, meaning they are assessed. You don't assume, even in those areas, it's automatic sakana. What if you're on your own and you don't have someone to ask, right? And then I would assume that you have amal lismoch to go l'kula and assume it's sakanas nefashos. If for anything else, that's the real reason I'm doing this. In other words, like in the majority of situations, you're going to ask a doctor, right? So the whole thing is going to be moot to some degree. However, if you don't have access to a doctor and you have something going on inside a person and you just don't know, then you don't think about it. Don't be machmir l'gabi Shabbos, be machmir l'gabi sakanas nefashos. And you'll have al mi lismo, for sure. There are definitely poskim, as Rav Shlomo Zalman mentioned, that don't even modify. They'll say, if Chazal said it, these are sakanas nefashos. What about the things that the Shulchan Aruch doesn't even modify? And the real example that I wanted to focus on is fever. And fever is a biggie. Fever is one of the most common things that you're going to deal with, right? And let's skip ahead to...
One quick question?
Yeah.
Are you telling the Rav, let's say there's no doctors around, that you can't rely on his prior knowledge? He's dealt with these types of scratches on the back of the hand before.
Oh, he definitely could. Right. I wouldn't say that. Thank you for the clarification. Meaning, let's say let's say that you've dealt with that with a competent doctor, you've dealt with that situation, and you already know that this, the only thing he has to be sure of, here's where he can run into trouble. I'll throw in the following caveat that might scare everybody off. Sometimes, and this goes back to my original statement about there's nothing like real shimush. Medically speaking, right, you have to have some experience to make assessments. I'll give you the classic area is what needs stitches, what doesn't need stitches, and for what reason. And there are certain areas of the body that have risks with it that others don't. And unless the case is absolutely, that's what I'm getting at, identical to the one you heard the doctor's assessment, you're running a little bit of a risk. Because there could be nuances that are different where you might be making a mistake. So if you're fully confident that this case is identical to that case, which there's nothing wrong with it, it's very possible that that's the way it's going to go, then you can pass it on your own and say, look, I don't need to bother that poor doctor sleeping Shabbos afternoon, whatever, right? I don't need to bother him. I'm very confident that the psak that he gave me, this is an identical case. If you have any doubt, then you're either going to have to wake him up or get him or do something or go to Chumrah. That's what I would say. I think I'd always rather err on the side of caution with this type of situation. Now, the one thing I want to tell you on page 11 is there is a little bit of a an issue that goes in the Shulchan Aruch, where in Halacha Zayin that we didn't mention are the list of the other types of cholos that a person could have that are not modified by the Shulchan Aruch, meaning there are fever and others that in Halacha Zayin and Shulchan Aruch he mentions these are automatic sakanos. And you don't ask, and it doesn't matter what the doctor says. So the Prima Gadim discusses this a little, and he qualifies that the entire, anything that's in Sif Zayin is of that type. All the ones listed, fever, a certain type of abscess in the rectal area, certain different types of situations that will be automatic sakanas. And then the problem is that he seems to make the assumption, therefore, like the Chazon Ish approach, like the Chasam Sofer, that if Chazal said it, even if a doctor will tell you it's not true, that's the end of the story. And then they point to on page 10, I'm not going to read through them, but these are famous cases of where clearly Shulchan Aruch doesn't go that way, where these are things that were considered by Chazal as sakana, and yet contemporary science says it's not, and the halacha is that it's not, right? Washing a baby with hot water before the bris or and after the bris, you need to do that, Mishim Sakana, that we've dropped. The famous Magen Avraham about fish and meat, right? There are definitely known cases where we don't assume Sakana. So what do we do with the steer? So the Baal, the Sefer Shmiras HaGufa HaNefesh, asked Rav Yashav this question. Which is it, like bottom line, which is it? Is it sometime, when do we scratch what the doctors say? And when do we uphold what the doctors say? Because it seems like the Shulchan Aruch does both. So here on page 11 is what Yashav is quoted as saying. He says, if it's just a single doctor, right, then you don't have to listen to him. And you could assume, right, one doctor against Chazal, forget it. But he says, davar muskam eitzel kol harofim, de'enos hakana az samchin al harofim. And that seems to be like almost the final word on this whole issue. Rav Yashav himself paskind that if it's a davar muskam, which is most issues are going to be that, because most doctors hopefully don't speak unless they're talking about a consensus opinion medically, right? So if a doctor gives you a statement, you know, his hunch, that's meaningless, right? That has no validity against Chazal. But if he tells you, you know, many peer-reviewed studies have shown, and the absolute consensus of the American Heart Association is this, you know, that already is a davar muskam mekol harofim, and that would hold the day.
Does Rav Yashav eat meat and fish together?
I don't know if Rav Yashav does it. I know that it's certainly something that many great poskim near and dear to us have no problem with. But Yashav's psak on that issue, I don't know. But in terms of, you know, whether that's davar muskam, you're saying, in terms of that,
sure,
that's interesting. Yeah, no, good shot. I have to think of that. I don't know what he would say. All right. Oh, so long-winded. So let's just focus on fever. How's everyone doing? Okay, good. Fever is the great challenge. If you look in the Shulchan Aruch, again, in that famous Seif Zayin now. Seif Zayin is our famous Seif where it seems that That's the word of Chazal. It should be even against the word of the doctor, right? Fiva's right in there. What is this kadachas cham biyoser? So already, you know, it's qualified because it doesn't just mean fever. Already the Mishnah Berurah is telling me, well, there's fever and there's fever, right? Which is nice to hear from the Mishnah Berurah because he's going to set the stage for an open discussion. It means that not every fever says you can be Mechal Shabbos Daraisa. But what exactly is the fever that you can? So the Mishnah Berurah says something that's going to not prove that useful to us. He said, well, there's what the Gemara means and what the Shulchan Aruch means is typhoid fever. How many people here have been encountered a case of typhoid fever? Not me. Not a very common Baruch Hashem thing we encounter. Apparently it was in Europe, right? That therefore, a lot of the poskim that discuss fever, they talk about typhoid fever. They assume that that's what the Gemara was talking about. Typhoid fever, that's a fever, Sakana Safashos. Any other fever, Stama fever, no. That is very dangerous. And the contemporary poskim are aware of this. And the contemporary poskim needed to deal with it. So we'll start with Rav Moshe because he really gets the ball rolling and generates all the reaction. Rav Moshe says he was asked the shaila, right? By, I think it was a doctor, maybe not a doctor, a Rav. He says, what's the deal with fever? Can we be Mechal Shabbos every time there's a fever? So he gives a definition, and this is where I was saying that I think he holds from Rav Shlomo Zalman's approach to suffix sakana. Because he says, any fever that stam ne'adam choshishin for as a sakana, that's a sakana. Right? You hear that statement? He says, if this fever on a Tuesday would be viewed by you as sakana stafashos, then on Shabbos it's also sakana stafashos. To me, that's exactly Rav Shlomo Zalman's definition of what do you do with something where the sakana mamish is not afanenu yet. Putting that aside, then Rav Moshe goes and he starts defining what this number is. What is it that stam a person worries about? So he picks a number. I know he must have asked doctors. And he said, okay, the stam a person worries about 102 fever. And he says, you know, by the way, if a given individual worries about 101, so he's worried about it. So for him, sakana stafashos. So, whoa, 101 fever? Who here has had 101 fever? Did you... Were you Mechal Shabbos Daraisa because of it? Would you be? So right away, everybody jumps on him, right? And the jumping takes place on page 13. The main two jumpers was the Tzitz Eliezer and Rav Pinchas Epstein.
This is undiagnosed fever, right? You don't know the cause.
Correct, exactly. That's a very, very important point. But for the moment, let's just go with the reaction, and then we can develop the shittas, and we'll clarify everything. So Rav Moshe is giving the numbers. And they jump on him, they're saying, you know, what's the statement of the Tzitz Eliezer says? He says, he repeats it, and he says, Kri, Shemutu l'chala l'fi daito, kol sheish l'adam chom b'mida shel karov l'shloshim u'shmona v'teisha, right? Which is about 101. He says, how could that be? And he redefines it, and he said, I asked a whole bunch of doctors, and the doctors thought it was ridiculous. So what's going on with this whole vikuach? Because, you know, everybody's asking doctors, they're coming out different ways, what's going on? So the bottom line, I think, is the way to settle or understand all this is Rav Moshe was talking about what? Rav Moshe is talking about how should a patient, a person who's a patient, not a doctor, handle a situation on Shabbos when there's fever. And that's who he's speaking to. And he's telling you what I think is medically 100% sound and correct, which is you should be concerned that something could be going on as soon as you have any fever. Right? And in a katan, the Chazanish and Rav Moshe lower the threshold to any fever at all. Right? In an adult or an older child, it's already going to be like 101, 102. What's special about those numbers? Is there a sakana to having a fever of 101, 102? Is there a sakana to having a fever? Well, if you have 106, that's a sakana. Any other fever is actually Hashem's built-in way of further treating your illness. Fever is a good thing. This is the one of those great misconceptions out there. Fever is part of the body's way of fighting an infection. Viruses and bacteria do not like hot temperatures, and therefore fever is a way of combating them. The only reason we treat fever is because of its discomfort, right? These are the ABCs of a pediatric residency, right? The first thing they treat you. You often treat it because it gives a person headaches, it makes them very uncomfortable, but it itself is not dangerous at all, right? And Rav Moshe is not saying that. But the Shaila, the Tzitz Eliezer, and Rav Epstein, they were dealing with is their doctors were telling them what I'm saying. Fever's not dangerous. Certainly 101's not dangerous. 102's not dangerous. No danger involved. What is dangerous is what a fever might represent. And any doctor will tell you, Afini's Daiti, that never assess a degree of danger of a fever just based on the fever and the height of the fever or the non-height of the fever. It's what the fever represents. That's where the danger is. That was Ramosha's concern. He wants people realizing that fact, that any fever can be a problem. What should you do? Well, let's say you're not going to be Doche Yisurim. You're going to hold back and say, well, you know, if I look, Rav Avad Yosef gives me a cutoff of 102.2. The Shevet HaLevi gives me a higher cutoff, right? I'm going to wait till it hits that. I have 101. That's not the kind of Rashi, so I'm going to sit tight and wait, right? That would be crazy. Do whatever you can. I tell people, as soon as there's a fever, you must get medical assessment. Don't assume. If it means making a phone call, call your doctor. If it means getting a doctor nearby, do that. Of course, that's better. You know, minimize the serum if you have the time. But you must do something. You have to address, in all these scenarios, the fever from a medical perspective. And then you can decide. Now, the one who I thought on page 14, who sees things my way, not really my way, but I think what Rav Moshe really was getting at, is Rav Zilberstein and Az Nidberu, comes to this conclusion. He gives all the whole discussion before this. What's going on with the fever? That's really the take-home message on fevers. I would say that the approach of the local Rav should be, A, never ignore a fever. You must address it to some degree. You must get some medical input on this fever, even if it requires Chilul Shabbos, right? Obviously doing it to a minimal degree. And certainly if you already have a hint, the person's coughing and appears to have pneumonia, that's Sakanas Nefashos right off the bat. If there's any hint to any systemic other involvement, it's going to be Sakanas Nefashos right off the bat. There are certain symptoms that a doctor will tell you over the phone immediately, get right to the emergency room. You got to find out if you fall into that category. There's no doubt about it. So that is the simple final word on fever. If we turn to page 15, we get to the issue of Yisuvei Das. This is another very commonly encountered issue. How far do we go in terms of treating psychological concerns, emotional concerns, as Sakanas Nefashos to allow us to be Doche Yisur D'Oraisa or other Yisurim? Right? Very, very common. How far do you go? Which questions get involved here? So you have the common ones like having somebody ride in the car with the person who's going to the hospital, having them come back, that kind of thing. And then it runs the gamut. You have even something like the following case that I was involved in. I'll never forget this one. It's a good one to end off with. Keep you in the cliffhanger. What should I have done in the following case? Person has, Rahman al-San, a terminal illness, a hepatic cancer, a liver cancer. They no real treatment for it that's of any real effect. Very bad prognosis, but they're hanging in there. And they read an article, and this was a real article, I saw it myself, and not a bad article, by the way, that determined that drinking green tea can possibly cure liver cancer. Now, the truth of the matter is, whether it can or not, I think what the authors were really trying to say is that it could hold it off, you know, help you avoid it, or something like that. But this woman honestly believed, in the fullest sense, that if she drank hot green tea, that was going to be something that would save her life. And she's asking on Shabbos to be able to have that tea made for her, Bishul Malacha D'Oraisa, for what would be, at most, a Yishuv Hadas. In other words, she is definitely a Chola Sheyesh.